You know what time it is. Come on. Weekend. Warrior. Podcast. Let me hear you. Come on. Weekend. Warrior. Podcast. Weekend Warrior Pod. Let's go.
No hot takes. No garbage. Just real talk.
Weekend Warrior Pod. Let's go.
No fake takes. No first takes. Just real talk.
Weekend Warrior Pod. Let's go.
This is the Weekend Warrior Podcast presented by WTP Sports. This is episode 47, which Jared Carabas might tell you is the mayor of Ding Dong City, Travis Shaw's episode. Could also be Tory Krug's episode, or perhaps even Tito Francona's episode. But I'm going to go with Robert Edwards. It's the Robert Edwards episode today. Man, Robert Edwards, what a story that guy was, man. Had a phenomenal rookie year. And then in a freak accident on the beach, ripped his knee apart, almost lost his leg in an NFL-sanctioned event, nonetheless. Kind of a rookie second-year thing. They had like a touch football game on the beach. And I've actually seen a clip of the play. It's pretty nasty because ball goes up and three guys go up for it. And he's one of the guys, obviously. And his knee just bends the wrong way and see you later. And he literally almost lost his leg, and he was out for 2 years and tried to come back with the Dolphins afterwards, and it just never materialized. Ran for 1,000 yards his rookie year. Looked like he was going to be the guy to take over for Curtis Martin, who had just left to go to the Jets. And, really unfortunate. But, man, he was awesome when he was here. So it was only that 1 year, but he was great. So anyways, 47 today, and again, that's Robert Edwards. So today we have a good show for you. Kevin Moore is going to join me. He's from the Fantasy Football Guys podcast, so he's going to come on. He's also an Eagles fan, so we'll have a pretty good conversation about that. So we'll see. And then after that, we get the 3-minute drill, and which if you're a fan of Disney, you're going to like this one. So it's a good one, and we also have This Week in Sports History. So that's what we got today, and let's get right into the interview with Kevin Moore from the Fantasy Football Guys podcast. All right, I want to welcome onto the show Kevin Moore. He is one of the hosts of the Fantasy Football Guys podcast. Kevin, thank you so much for joining the show.
Hey, man, thanks for having me.
Yeah, we got fouled up a little bit trying to figure it out, but we're here. We're here, and we're getting it done. So
exactly. Yeah, we've been trying to get together now for a week to get this done. But hey, you know what? Better late than never.
Exactly. I feel the same way. So now you are, for those listeners that don't know, you are an Eagles fan. Matter of fact, I've been hearing you and Lyle, rightfully so as well. But every time we talk about the Eagles, you know, the Super Bowl champion Eagles, as you should be doing. But it's just chuckle every time I hear it.
Yeah, every time we mention them now, we say Super Bowl, a world champion, Philadelphia Eagles.
And as you should. I mean, you should do that until they lose in the playoffs if that happens. And if they win again, then they're the Super Bowl champions again. So that's what I would do.
Dude, if they win it again, my head's just going to explode. I don't want to go on record. So, yeah, you kind of wanted to hear like how we reacted to that week. I mean, it really started a couple weeks before that. Let me open up by saying that my partner, Lyle, is a season ticket holder for the Eagles. Like, I don't know, 8 years ago, we made a few dollars on our podcast, and we decided to spend it on getting, you know, buying season tickets from somebody so we could go to all the Eagles games. And then after the season was over, the guy sold those seat licenses to Lyle. So he's been a season ticket holder ever since. So he's on the 40-yard line on the visitor side, third row. So he's right close to the field. So they're great seats. Yeah. Thanks. So he went to the game, of course, for the Atlanta Falcons first round. And so then he's going crazy with me. Like, we got to go to the NFC Championship game. We have to go. So usually I don't go because I like, you know, watching the game with my kids and stuff. So anyway, so I decided to go to this game, and we all know what happened with Minnesota. The Eagles just blew them out. It was a great experience to be there with the trophy presentation, and Terry Bradshaw's up on the stage and confetti's flying and the whole thing. And we'd gotten the limo to go up. So, you know, there was some drinking going on. So the whole thing was great. Right. Yeah. So then, the 2 weeks in between was brutal waiting for it to happen. And, you know, we were both like, it's the Patriots. The Eagles are going to lose, but you know what? It's been a great season. We didn't think we were even going to get this far, but the Eagles are in the Super Bowl. This is going to be fantastic. So, you know how the game went. It was back and forth. It was, what, one punt in the entire game?
Yep.
So there was no defense at all. So when Brandon Graham knocks the ball from Brady's hand with 2 minutes left and they don't get the first down and they don't score a touchdown there to basically put the game away, and they kick the field goal to go up by eight, we're bouncing off the walls. He's over at my house as we're watching this, and when Brady threw the Hail Mary into the end zone and Gronk almost caught it, and we look at the clock and there's zeros, we just flipped out. I mean, it's hard to convey a lifetime of being an Eagles fan in the same division with multiple Super Bowl winners. Dallas fans, Redskins fans, Giants fans, all like, oh, you don't have any Super Bowls. It's awful being in that situation. And then to all of a sudden live in a world where the Eagles have won a Super Bowl, it's a surreal experience. And I have to pinch myself even now, 2 months later.
Well, it's awesome, man. And so I'm actually a season ticket holder for the Patriots. And my father has had season tickets, had a pair of tickets in 67. And has basically been going ever since. And, that first Super Bowl for us, that 01 Super Bowl, I became a season ticket holder in the year 2000. And uh-huh. So that was, for me, and I was a senior in high school in 01, but that was like, it was unbelievable. I mean, we were, I just remember we were with all my friends and we were just flipped out, jumping on each other. And we got in our cars. And we just drove around town. Like, what the hell are we going to do? And I remember we drove in like a cul-de-sac and there was a guy, and I don't know if he was drunk or if he was just so excited and his little girl was outside and he was like, he was just like dancing with his like 6-year-old girl in the middle of the street. And we're just honking our horns, like driving around him. And he's like giving high fives, everyone through the windows. It was crazy, but it was one of those things that you just, that first time, there's nothing like it. And the Patriots have won five, obviously. And, so many of them are unbelievable. The Butler play at the end and the Falcons won, last year. But, like, nothing will ever beat that first one when you win it and you're like, I can't believe it. Like, we did it. Like, it's just, oh, it's awesome.
Well, and the Patriots first one and the Eagles first one here, it's not dissimilar because – nobody thought those teams were, either of those teams were going to win going into the playoffs. I mean, the Eagles were, an underdog first seed because of the Carson Wentz situation. Nobody expected Foles to play the way he did. And that's obviously great coaching, but, the Patriots were Cinderellas from the start. So, it's like when the Rams were, when Kurt Warner's in his first year, everybody expected them to win because they were awesome all year long. They dominated all year long. So, when they started marching through the playoffs, it was almost a given that they were going to win the Super Bowl. Patriots first and Eagles first, nobody expected that to happen, especially because, the Patriots were playing the juggernaut that was the Rams, and the Eagles are playing the juggernaut that was the Patriots. So nobody expected those teams to have a chance, going in.
Right. So it's not just true. It's true. And the quarterbacks of both those teams are the MVPs. Actually, no, that's not true. I think was Falk the MVP? Falk might have been the MVP. Either way, I know that the Rams had the MVP on the team. I think it was Falk that was the MVP in 01, though. Warner is the last MVP to win the Super Bowl. He was the MVP in 99, and they won the Super Bowl in 99, and he's the last one. Ever since then, it's like, that's why all year long I was like, let Carson Wentz be the MVP. Give him the MVP. And then the Patriots can win the Super Bowl, and it's like stupid Wentz gets hurt, and Brady wins the MVP, and they lose the Super Bowl. So it, it is what it is, but it's kind of crazy. I mean,
stupid Wentz.
I know, right? Yeah. Well, it's just, it's funny because you just like for you guys now. I mean, we had a little bit of a quarterback controversy in 01. I mean, there was some real unrest around here when Bledsoe came back and was healthy. For the AFC Championship game, people wanted him back in the game for the Super Bowl, and obviously Belichick didn't do that, and they ended up trading, Bledsoe before the year the next year. But now you're going to have the Super Bowl MVP as your backup quarterback this year, which is kind of crazy. But, I mean, what are you going to do? You can't start him over Wentz.
You know, he may get it the first couple of weeks. Who knows? I mean, you know,
Wentz isn't ready. Injury is
a little more significant than they let on. But, you know, if the thing is, you know, if Wentz is back and healthy and Sudfeld, you know, progresses the way he could, I mean, you know, you remember Bradford was the quarterback going into last year, 2 years ago, actually. And then they traded him. So, you know, if Wentz is ready to roll and some team has an injury to their starting quarterback, you know, it's not over.
Right.
They could trade him for something, you know, before the trade deadline if Wentz is up and rolling. So, that's you know, he may still go.
Yeah.
But it's not, I think it's going to be, you know, until very late in the preseason, you know, if it's not the trade deadline. So.
Right. That's a good point. That's a good point. So one thing I did want to talk to you about, and I know that, you know, you're an Eagle, and one thing I want to stress to you right away. Anything that came out recently doesn't take anything away from what the Eagles did. It doesn't mean that the Patriots should have won the game. I mean, anyone that would point to that and say that, you know, that's the reason the Patriots lost is insane, because the Patriots, you know, deserve to lose, and they had a million chances to win, and they didn't do it. And so, you know, with that being said, though, the fact that they were, you know, basically making the rules up on the fly, it is utterly insane. I mean,
you're talking about specifically the Corey Clement catch, right?
The catch rule, right? The Zach Ertz touchdown is a touchdown for as long as the NFL has been going. It's a catch. I don't care what the rules are; it makes no difference. He takes four steps and then jumps into the end zone. That's clearly a touchdown. The Clement one. Yeah, the Clement one to me was called an incompletion all year long, and then you get to the Super Bowl, and the same play happens, and they call it a catch, and it's like, what are you doing? You know, and so, and again, like I said, Patriots had chances to win. They probably still should have won the game, and they scored, they scored with 9.5 minutes left to take the lead, and they allowed the Eagles to drive right down the field for, you know, 7 minutes or however long it was, and, you know, and score a touchdown and take the lead and win. And they couldn't score when they got the ball back. But you look at it and say, just imagine. I mean, this is the way I look at it. Let's just say that the Patriots had gotten the benefit of those calls, because there are some people out there that actually think the Ertz catch was questionable, which I think is crazy. But there are people that question that. Let's say that the Patriots had been the beneficiary. What do you say?
I said the people who were complaining about the Ertz catch at the end are just salty because the Patriots lost. I mean, he caught it, took two steps and jumped. So
right. You're probably right about that. I mean, I would say, I'd go so far as to say, I think he took three steps before he jumped. So, I mean, you know, to me, it's definitely a catch. I mean, so whatever, people can argue about that, but I think they're nuts. But the way I look at it is that let's just say the Patriots have been the beneficiary of those two calls. And then it comes out that Troy Vincent was in New York and they were legislating on the fly and changing the rules. And it would be the biggest story in the entire country right now. And
it would be,
you know, but because
a lot of the perception is that the Patriots get special treatment. And a lot of that comes down to the fact that they had one offensive penalty throughout the entire playoffs. So, you know, whether Clement got that call or not, only flagging a team one time for offense in the entire playoffs is a little crazy. I'm not saying that, you know, the fix was in, but that seems a little bit too lopsided to me. Now, the thing about the Clement catch, that wasn't a third or fourth down. So say that goes the Patriots' way, or say it doesn't go the Eagles' way, and they go, that's an incomplete pass. Who's to say two plays later they don't punch it in to score anyway? So
that's true.
I'm not so sure about that. You know, anything could have happened. Foles could have thrown another pick. Who knows? But, you know, it happened the way it did. You know, I'm not sure that, you know, honestly, when I saw that catch, I'm like, that's not a catch. They're going to take that away. But when they said touchdown, I was like, okay, I'm not going to complain. And right. Watching the, what they call the sound, you know, when they had the mic'd up guys, they had, Sterator mic'd up, and he was like, the ball moved, but he never lost control of it. I'm like, okay, well, I'll buy that. But, you know, looking at other plays throughout the course of the season, where the ball moved in control, but they still called it incomplete. Even, you know, reaching New York for their input, still calling it incomplete. I was shocked that they gave that touchdown to Clement, honestly. Not going to complain about it, but I was shocked.
No, of course. Yeah. And like I say, I mean, you know, you're totally right about the fact that, you know, the Clement, if the Clement touchdown doesn't count, let's say, I still don't think it necessarily changes. I mean, obviously, right, it could change the outcome of the game. Like you said, like when, you know, Foles could throw an interception, the Patriots get it, who knows?
Yeah.
The big.
So, you know, what the hell were they thinking? I don't know, but I can see, you know, a Patriots fan being salty. But on the other hand, you know, as you wiggle your five rings fingers, it's like, yeah, what are you going to get greedy now? Want the sixth? You know, so I don't know. It's I understand, but, you know, 2 months afterward, they've changed the rule. So a lot of catches that weren't catches will now be catches. So,
right.
You know, it's all different now. So
no, I get that. I just think, you know, regardless of whether the Patriots would have won or not, you know, I just look at it and just say, how can you? It blows my mind the NFL would be that stupid to put someone in the booth and change the rules before the Super Bowl without telling anybody and just call the game differently. It blows my mind that they would be that dumb to try to do that.
Dude, that's not what blows my mind. What blows my mind is that they're dumb enough to let people know they did that after the fact.
Yes, that's true. Why tell anybody?
You know, corporations do things all the time that are a little bit shady, but they deny it all the way to the end.
Right.
So if you're going to be transparent, you know, talk to Rich Eisen about it before the game and say, you know what, we're going to adjust things a little bit because we anticipate the rules changing. So this is what they're going to be. If you don't do that, then shut up about it all the way through. Deny it to the end.
That's crazy.
You know?
Yeah. So. Oh, God. So... anyways, so, but listen, like I said, I mean, you know, as far as I'm concerned, I mean, and people will talk about the Patriots cheating all this and everything. It doesn't affect any of my perception about that. And regardless of whether it was called differently, I don't care what the situation is. It takes nothing away from what the Eagles did because they deserve that win. And at this point, whether they deserved it or not, you can't take it away. So it is what it is. You know what I mean? Like that forever, you know? So,
No asterisk next to the win. That's for sure.
Right. Exactly. So, but it's pretty awesome. And, you know, and for me, it's funny, but like, if I'm going to lose, I mean, at least it wasn't the Giants, first of all, but like, at least it was, you know, at least it was a struggling fan base. Like we can identify with that right now. Most Patriots fans now maybe can't identify with Philadelphia, but like, I identify with the Philadelphia fans, and I'm like, that was my life. My, you know, up until I was a senior in high school, that was my life. And my dad was like, my dad said to me, he's like, I still can't believe it's real. Like, I look up and see now there's five, but he's like, I can't believe we have one of them. Like they were, you know, back in the 70s, he said, you tell me the stories he has, man, are unbelievable. He's like, back in the 70s, they got a legitimate standing ovation in the third quarter for crossing the 50-yard line. And it was just like they were that bad that they were Cleveland before Cleveland was Cleveland. And it was just like, but, you know.
There were a lot of those teams back then. I mean, you know, for years the Broncos were awful, and then John Elway came around. So, you know, I know they made a Super Bowl with Craig Morton, but that was an anomaly. Dude, I remember the Steve Grogan days, you know, the Tony Eason days. I remember all of those.
Yeah.
The Patriots were terrible, no doubt. And yeah. I think they started to turn around when they got Parcells, right?
For sure. Yeah.
And they went to the Super Bowl and they didn't win it, but you know, it kind of started the upward trend.
Put them on the map. Then, yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know that a lot of all those Super Bowls would have been won with Bledsoe. You know, Brady's just a machine, so. You know, a lot of things fell into place for the Patriots, and you know, they were a very well-run organization, and they're going to continue to be. I think, you know, it obviously comes right from Belichick, but, you know, I think it would have been better if they'd kept Garoppolo, honestly, and cut Brady loose so they could continue this for the next dozen years or so. But, you know, as an Eagles fan, I'm kind of glad they didn't. So we'll see.
Yeah, that's I mean, that's a big – that's like around here, that's the biggest story, you know, is the Garoppolo Brady thing and what, you know, what was the right move. I personally think they had no choice but to trade Garoppolo because, you know, even if you only get three more years with Brady, he's still the best quarterback in the NFL right now. Like, how do you trade the best quarterback in the NFL for a guy who you think is good, but you know, you don't know. And I understand your point of, you know, of extending it. But to me, it was just like, you know, how do you trade? He's the best. I mean, he's probably the best player in the league. And you're going to trade the best player. And I know he's, you know, going to be 41 next year, but the guy is just a machine. He just keeps going. And so to me, it was just like, you know, you really didn't have a choice, unfortunately. And I wish, you know, it stinks. The situation stinks, you know, because I think Belichick drafted Garoppolo thinking he'd be the next guy. And then, you know, he gets to.
They drafted a lot of guys thinking they were going to be the next guy.
Right. Yeah. And Brady just keeps going. So it's just ridiculous, but that's the way it goes. So, all right, let's get into some fantasy football since you are a fantasy football guy. So I guess the first question here is the biggest move fantasy-wise this offseason, and obviously I know, you know, this could change because OBJ, you know, there's some rumblings about OBJ possibly being traded, so obviously I'm sure that would have, you know, a big ramification, but as outside of a potential OBJ move, what do you think the biggest move fantasy-wise this offseason was?
Well, yeah, I'm gonna hedge my bets a little bit. Instead of saying, you know, a player, I'm gonna say the fact that so many starting quarterbacks were available via free agency. So we all know about Kirk Cousins, right? So, you know, players that have been, you know, starters in the league, they're, you know, Minnesota had three of them. You know, Sam Bradford has been stealing money his entire career, but he still is a good quarterback when he's healthy, which is not often, but when he is, he can win ball games. So, you know, he's available. Bridgewater was a starter and having some success in Minnesota. And Keenum is available as well. So, you know, Keenum going to the Broncos, Bradford going to Arizona, Tyrod Taylor going to Cleveland. I don't remember a year where so many starting quarterbacks were available in free agency and went to teams. Now, probably most of those teams, of course, Cousins as well, most of those teams are going to, you know, draft a quarterback. I would be shocked if the Broncos didn't. We know Buffalo wants another one, so their situation's up in the air. Arizona should probably draft a quarterback. Don't know who. You know, and it may not be a first-rounder, but, you know, all these quarterbacks available, you know, changing, you know, the situation that they left, and then changing the situation that they go to. All these guys, from Keenum to Bradford, Tyrod, all those guys change the you know, fantasy value of everybody on those teams. So, you know, that's a huge shakeup, and I don't recall that ever happening in fantasy or in football before.
That's a good point. I mean, they really did see a ton of overhaul on the fantasy quarterbacks. And you're right, Minnesota, it's kind of crazy. I mean, you know, you mentioned Teddy Bridgewater. I mean, talk about betting on yourself. Like, that guy really bet on himself. I mean, he's got, I think his base salary is $500,000, and that's it. You know, and so, like, the rest of it's basically incentive. So it's like, you know, he could make $500,000 next year, and that's it. And he could sit on the bench and not play, and I'm assuming they're going to draft a quarterback at three. The quarterback they draft at number three could start all year, and he could make $500,000. You know, or he could be the starter and make $5 million. So it's like, you know, he's obviously betting on himself, which you want to see, I guess. But, you know, kind of a crazy contract for him to sign, especially when you see, you know, Keenum and, you know, Bradford, you know, signing bigger deals. It was surprising.
Especially since, you know, I'm not sure that you know, say it's Baker Mayfield. I'm not sure he's going to come in and take the gig. But I would be shocked if it wasn't McCown, quite frankly. You know, so you know, it's going to be a crowded quarterback room. And, you know, the guy they drafted third, you know, they didn't get up there to draft anybody other than a quarterback. So, you know, they're going to want that person to take over relatively quickly. And depending on who they get, you know, if it's Josh Rosen, you know, he's allegedly the most, you know, ready quarterback in the draft. He could start week one if he, you know, proves himself. So, yeah, that was kind of a weird situation. You know, When he hadn't signed his contract, you know, well after, you know, the free agency actually started, I thought, well, maybe he's rethinking that because they got McCown and they traded up, you know, so maybe he'll find his way to Buffalo or something like that. But it didn't happen. So, yeah, it was kind of a weird thing for him. But I think he wanted to make sure he was on a team and maybe, you know, find his way somewhere else next year or, you know, be traded somewhere by the trading deadline.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense too. I mean, AJ McCarron too, who we didn't even mention, could be the starting quarterback of Buffalo. And you know, I don't understand the Jets. And you know, I'm not sure what you think of it, but the Jets trade up to three, I thought was crazy. So they trade up to three, and they, obviously they're comfortable drafting all of those three quarterbacks. And they gave up an awful lot to do that. And you know, Chicago did a similar thing last year. They gave up a lot less. But when they traded up to two, you know, Cleveland already drafted at one. So it was like they knew what they were getting at two. The Jets have no idea what they're getting. So they have to be comfortable with all three quarterbacks. Seems weird to me. Or
three out of the four, anyway. I mean, you know, it seems as though Darnold's going to be the first guy for Cleveland, right? And they have Tyrod to hold his place. Who knows what the Giants can do? A lot of people are saying they got to take Saquon Barkley, which would be ridiculous because
that'd be insane.
You know, the last time the Giants had a top five pick, they picked Phillip Rivers and traded for Eli Manning. So, you know, I think it was Colin Cowherd said the Giants are never this bad. So when they get up here, when you have a 35, 36 year old quarterback, you have to get the next guy because Eli may not be there for, you know, 7 or 8 more years like Brady's going to be. So you have to get the next guy. And you have to get one of these best guys, one of the four best guys in the draft. So I would be shocked if they took anything other than quarterback. So that leaves the Jets with, you know, like you said, maybe it's Baker Mayfield, maybe it's Rosen, maybe it's Allen. You know, who knows? Maybe they really love Lamar Jackson, wanted to get up there and get him, you know? I think, you know, the Bears did it last year. And I'm starting to call it, you know, the Rams-Eagles model because – You saw what the Rams did to get up first to get Goff. And you saw, you know, the Eagles went from, you know, the middle of the draft and they traded with Miami, you know, a bunch of players to move up to, you know, the early teens. And then they traded with Cleveland and they gave up a lot. And as a matter of fact, you know, the Eagles still don't have a second round pick this year behind that trade. So, you know, to move up to two to get Wentz. Nobody's complaining about the fact that we don't have a two this year because we have Wentz, right? So.
Right.
You know, it's the price is well worth it. So I think a lot of teams are seeing that. Like if we trade up and we get that guy who's our franchise quarterback for the next minimum decade, it's worth, you know, getting rid of those second round, third round picks and you know, being able to get up there and get that guy. So it's not surprising. And as long as it continues to work, teams are going to continue to do it. So Trubisky turned out to be a guy who's, you know, great for Chicago. Now, I don't know if you remember this time last year, but people were like, not sure about Trubisky. Not sure he's going to be the guy. Not sure he's pro ready. Not sure, not sure. Deshaun Watson, not sure. He's more of an athlete than a quarterback. Look what he did for Texans. So, you know, all these guys who are, you know, allegedly not ready are actually proving to be really ready when they get the chance.
Yeah, it's really unbelievable. I mean, we've had a few years in a row now where a lot of these young quarterbacks have hit. And I know Goff's rookie year looked terrible, but, you know, last year was fantastic.
That was the Jeff Fisher effect.
That's a good point. I mean, geez, he had that effect on Nick Foles and Case Keenum and everybody else, everybody around him. He made them worse. Right. So you have to attribute that to him, I guess, right? But, I mean,
Right. You know, he had three playoff quarterbacks on his roster and couldn't win with them. And the next year, they're all in the playoffs, and one of them is Super Bowl MVP. Thanks, Jeff Fisher.
Ridiculous. What a joke that guy is. I can't believe he had a job for that long. But, you know, I agree with you. I mean, I do think, too, I think these teams that are trading down, I still think that's a smart move, too. I mean, because you never know where you're going to get. You know, I feel like the Browns have picked up a ton of extra capital, and I know that, you know, they suck right now. They're terrible right now, but it seems like now they're in that position where they're going to draft the guy that they want at one, and then they, you know, hopefully will have a guy at four that they want as well, or they'll trade back with four. Who knows? You know, but I think those things have worked out really well for them. I mean, obviously, you know, Deshaun Watson was great for Houston last year, but Houston was terrible because he got hurt. And so they end up with the number four pick. So it was like, you know, may work out in their benefit. And I just think, you know, anytime you get offered a king's ransom to trade back, I think you have to do it unless you're 100% convinced that that guy is the guy. I mean, I remember, you know, the Akilah Smith story is the craziest one, right? Where, you know, the Saints offered the Bengals the entire package they offered to get Ricky Williams. They offered the same exact package to move up and draft Akilah Smith. And they threw in like another first. There was like two first round draft picks, three second round. It was ridiculous. And they were like, no, we're drafting Akilah Smith. And it was like, you idiots. You know, it's like, and so it's, right. You know, like, it's almost like if you're given a king's ransom, kind of have to take it unless you know that that guy is going to be the guy.
Exactly. And, you know, they probably offered the Eagles that too. And the Eagles were like, no, we're going to stick and get McNabb. And that obviously worked out pretty well for them.
Right.
You know, so. You know, even though we, you know, Eagles didn't win a Super Bowl with him, you know, we went to the NFC Championship game a bunch of years. So that worked out pretty well.
He was a very good quarterback. So, I mean, I think it, you know, certainly I think that was a good pick, obviously. So, all right. So, out of the four quarterbacks, which one do you think is the best? I mean, it's tough, like, to kind of think. You were saying that Rosen, you think, is the most pro ready, from what people say.
Yeah, that's you know what the quote unquote experts are saying. I think it depends on what kind of offense you want to run, and I also think it's a situation like we were talking about before. Free agents, you know, going to you know, certain situations can either help or hinder. But you know, it seems to me like, you know, it's Tyrod Taylor's show for the first year, and Darnold is, you know, I think is going to be. Maybe not the best one, but I think he's the best for Cleveland. Yeah. I really like Mayfield to the Jets because I think, you know, he's got that attitude. He's got the swagger. And I think he would be a good fit in New York. Now, the problem is that he needs to not enjoy New York very much. You know what I mean? He needs to stay home and keep his nose in the in the playbook, that sort of thing. So I'm not sure how well he would do in that situation. I honestly, I think if given time, and not thrown right into the fire. I think Josh Allen is a guy who's going to light the league on fire. Dude's got a crazy arm. He's had to fight for everything he's gotten. And I think he's just got all the intangibles. I think all these guys are going to be good. I think Lamar Jackson is going to be fantastic. I don't know where he's going to go. I'd love to see him go to Arizona.
Go ahead.
If I had to pick one guy that, you know, if the Eagles needed a quarterback and, you know, they could get anyone they wanted to, I think I would want Baker Mayfield.
Okay. All right. Yeah.
You know, I think he wasn't recruited. He fought his way on, walked on to his junior college, started there, won there, walked on to his college. And won the starting job there. And his style of play, he's a bit of a gunslinger, takes chances, but it's hyper accurate, and wins. So yeah, for me, it would be Mayfield.
Okay. All right. I think the Lamar Jackson one is interesting because, you know, Lamar Jackson, I think, is going to be a good quarterback in the NFL. And here they are again I don't want to say it's a black quarterback thing, but you know, he should switch to wide receiver. And, you know, what do you think about going to wide receiver? And is he there? And it's like, you know, come on. Like, just because he's mobile, you know, and he's black doesn't mean that he can't play quarterback. Like, we saw with Deshaun Watson last year, like, he can be a good quarterback. And, of course, the Wonderlic scores came in. He got a 13 on the Wonderlic score. But, like, even still, I just, you know, like, I don't think it matters that much. I think some team is going to draft him at quarterback. And if they give him enough time and they allow, you know, they give him a situation where he can learn, he's going to be a very good quarterback in the NFL, is more my opinion is.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, you hope that it's not a race thing, that they want to, they see him more as a wide receiver than a quarterback. You know, and you hope it's not that, but, you know, it's hard to tell what's in people's heads. You know, some of the questions people, you know, some of these players get asked at the combine, you know, is amazing to me. It's like, do you know where we are now?
It's unbelievable.
You know, do you like men? Does that matter at this point? It doesn't really. So right. It wouldn't surprise me if race wasn't a factor in that, but, you know, and that's unfortunate in the world today. But I think it's more of the fact that the offense that he played in in college at Louisville. And the fact that he just outruns everybody, they, you know, maybe these people who want him to you know, run the wide receiver drills at the combine because of his speed, see that, right. You know, but you look at his game tape and you go, he's going to make somebody a really, really happy GM and coach for his quarterback play. So he's going to be a first rounder. I have no doubt about that. And, you know, he's going to be starting for some team for years to come, barring injury, of course, like everybody else. But, you know, I think maybe not forward-thinking GMs, but certainly people who can scout talent well will be picking him up.
Okay. All right. Now, as far as fantasy this year, and we'll go outside of the rookies here, for you, the number one skill player on your board, who do you think the number one skill player is?
Well, we tend to value running backs because running backs and wide receivers more than quarterbacks and tight ends, et cetera. So if I have the number one pick in the draft this year, I'm gonna take Todd Gurley.
Okay. That's cool. It's funny because it's almost like last year he wasn't the number one pick, but 2 years ago he was the number one pick, and so it's kind of coming back to Gurley, you know?
But the thing is, you look at what you know, when he was playing with on a Jeff Fisher offense, it was obviously terrible for a bunch of reasons. But with McVay there as that coach running that offense, Goff is better. You know, they got receivers that can catch. You know, they have a bunch of good receivers. You know, the line is improved. You know, they brought in a bunch of players on defense. That team's going to be scary good. And, you know, everything is there for Gurley to have plenty of success. He catches the ball, you know, reasonably well, but he's a much better runner, and he's going to have lots of opportunity. And barring injury, you know, he's going to have a year like he had last year, no question.
Yeah. All right. I like it because I think you're right. I mean, it makes the most sense, I think, you know, taking Gurley number one, especially if – you know, I don't know how many leagues do this, but, you know, I've played in leagues where actually I'm a commissioner, one of them, where you get points per carry. We don't get points per carry. We get half a point per, I think it's five carries. So we get, you know, you get right. Something, you get a benefit for carries. Right. Pretty much. Right. And so it's like, you know, if you get that, if you get point, even if it's 0.1 per carry or 0.5 per carry, a guy like that is going to get a ton of carries. And so, you know, so you want a guy like that on your team. And so I think Gurley makes a lot of sense at number one. So I like that one. And then how about quarterback? So obviously, so not just skill position player here, but your best number one quarterback at the end of the year.
Number one quarterback going into this year. Well, you know what? If Wentz was healthy, I would like him because he was lighting it up, obviously. Yeah. If Deshaun Watson comes back healthy, he won me a bunch of games, man. When he was starting, he won me a bunch of games. You know, but realistically, you know, I think it's that's a tough one. I mean, you know, you look at last year. You know, Breeze is always he didn't average over 300 yards a game this last year, like he has, you know, for the you know previous years. But he's always a guy that I think I'm going to want to have. I like Phillip Rivers. He's won me a bunch of games. Yeah, the thing is the way you know we like to play is, you know, I'm not going to get the best quarterback on the roster because they're going to go too soon. You know, I don't like to get, you know, first, second, third, fourth, fifth. You know, I'm going to get my quarterback in the seventh or eighth round. You know, so you know that's generally what I look to do. So you know the best quarterback in the league. You know, you got to look at Brady, obviously. I mean, that you'd be crazy not to, right?
Right. Maybe Rodgers, Brady, you know, I mean, I think a guy that gets drafted kind of middle of the pack who really does well is Russell Wilson. I mean, he had a phenomenal year last year. But the problem with him is that I feel like he has some unbelievable games. And then he has a few games. He did it at the end of the year where he has a few games where you're like, what's he doing? Yeah, he just had a, you know, he threw for 100 yards with two picks, and you're like, what the heck's he doing? You know, and so he lost people championships because he sucked in the last few games of the season.
Exactly.
All right, so we'll move on from the quarterbacks, and you know, out of curiosity here, who's the player that's moved up your board most since the start of last season. So the guy that, you know, maybe wasn't, you know, wasn't great, but, or we didn't think was going to be great and turned out to be, you know, either a first, second round draft pick or went from a, you know, a super late round draft pick to like a third or fourth round draft pick. You know, the guy that, that moved up the boards the most for you.
Well, the obvious answer is got to be Alvin Kamara. I mean, that guy just came out of nowhere and just blew the place up. I mean, we were expecting pretty big things out of Mark Ingram, and he didn't disappoint. You know, so, but you look at Kamara, and he just came out of nowhere. You know, Peterson was on the staff, so it was like, okay, well, here's this kid who's going to do nothing. And then it turns out, you know, he blew up. You know, there's a couple other guys I'm looking at. I mean, obviously, Kareem Hunt led the league in rushing yards, but he had a few down games. You know, a guy I'm looking to really bounce back this year, a couple guys really. I'm looking at Dalvin Cook. When, you know, if he comes back healthy and ready to go, I'll be excited to see what he can do. And another guy that I'm really hoping that this year he can do something is John Ross for the Bengals. I mean, here's a guy who ran a 4.22 40, but he just couldn't stay healthy last year. So hopefully, you know, this coming year, he'll be able to get out of Marvin Lewis's doghouse and, you know, be able to contribute to the team and to fantasy as well. I mean, he's going to be one of those guys you can draft probably in the 11th or 12th round and you know, really get a lot of value out of him.
That one just felt like such an old school Raiders pick to me, where they were like, huh, this guy, he runs fast. Okay, we'll draft him. And it was just like, you know, I think it was like the number 10 pick overall. And I was just like, what are you doing? It just, I don't know. I mean,
definitely,
I don't know.
Very Al Davis.
Right, right. I was just like, you know, who ran the fastest in the combine? All right, great. Draft him in the first round. It's just like,
we
what
like
are you doing?
People.
Yeah, I just, you know, and I mean, he can certainly, he may have a breakout year this year. Who knows? But, you know, to me, I just look at him and was like, I don't know. I don't know. Not crazy about John Ross, but you're right with the speed. And it'll be, you put him in that offense and you never know, like, it, you know, it could certainly happen. So, and you draft, like you said, with a guy like that, you're drafting him wicked late in the 12th, 13th round. You're just taking a shot at him. And, you know, with the speed he has, he could have a big year, you know? And so that's a good point there. I like that one. So, okay. So, how many leagues do you play in, like yourself?
I was in seven last year.
Okay. That's not bad.
It isn't. I've been in more, but, you know, and I try to go for around four or five, but I always seem to get sucked into other leagues. Last year I had a pretty good year. Actually, I think I won four or five of them.
That's awesome. That's great.
Didn't win a lot of money. It didn't win my money leagues, but I won the other ones. it seems to be the way it works, but a couple leagues. The hardest league I'm in is a dynasty league that is, you know, people that are like pretty active on our forum on our website we've been at this league now for, I don't know, 10 years, and it's a dynasty league. You keep 10 players. You know, the draft is really all about rookies, and I won that one last year. I beat Liz Losa from Yahoo Fantasy Sports. She's in the league. And I beat her in the championship game. It was the first time I've ever won it. So I felt like I don't care about the money leagues. I won the hardest league I'm in.
Yeah, that's awesome.
It was pretty cool.
I've never done a dynasty before, but it seems like it would be so hard, like so much work.
It is. And there's 14 teams, right? And there's like, I think 17 active roster spots and two IR spots, right? So the waiver wire is, there's just nothing. There's nothing.
Barren wasteland. So, terrible.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, if somebody gets a hangnail or, you know, the beginning of a turf toe, automatically their backup disappears from the waiver wire, even though it's nobody you've ever heard of.
Right.
Gone.
Yeah.
Well, let me go take a look at that guy. And the week before, somebody picked him up. You're like, good God. So literally, the team you draft, for the most part, is the team you play with for the season.
Yeah.
And you know, there's some trades. And, you know, one year, I think it was a couple of years ago, I actually had the first and second pick. I had finished second to last, and I traded, I think it was Marshawn Lynch for the first pick. And just so I said, this was a few years ago. And I picked Melvin Gordon and Todd Gurley, 1 and 2.
Wow.
So those were my running backs last year. Lyle, who was picking third, I think he had traded up to that spot, picked Amari Cooper and told me I was crazy for not taking him. I was like, no, I think Amari. I'll take your running backs, of course, are at a premium in every league, but in that league, it's even worse. So
yeah. Oh, my goodness.
The another league that I won last year was the Blog Talk Radio Fantasy Football Experts League, also a 14-team league. First year in that, I was pretty happy to take that down because, you know, it's one of those leagues where everybody pays just as much attention to fantasy as I do. And, right. and being able to walk out of there with a tournament win was pretty special. Kind of like that.
That's awesome. That's really awesome.
Then I won a couple others, some little throwaway leagues. I mean, I came close to winning my, we do through our website, listener leagues. You know, we kind of draw names out of a hat and whatnot. And so there's a lot of listeners like playing in leagues with us, and we make them fun. I thought I'd won that league, but I look back on it, and I don't think I did. I was telling people I did, but then I looked back, and I was like, well, maybe I didn't win that because it kind of upset me. I'm like, wait a minute, I thought I'd won that. But anyway, so yeah, I won like four last year. So
okay, yeah, I'm a commissioner in one league. Actually, I think I was a commissioner in two leagues. But either way, I won. I was back to back champion in the league that I run. And last year, I had probably the worst draft ever. It was brutal. So it's a keeper league, but only one keeper in the, you know, he goes away in the first round. My keeper was David Johnson. I drafted Zeke Elliott in the first round or second round. I drafted Gronk with the next pick, and I drafted Allen Robinson in the fifth round. So it was like everybody on my roster was gone. Like I had nobody. All my star players were gone. And I made trades, and I picked up people on the waiver wire, and I just, I don't know how the hell I did it, but I just pieced together my team. And by the end of the year, my team was, you know, totally different than the team I started with. And yeah. And somehow I was able to pull it out, and I was just like, I don't know how the hell I did that, but I won the championship.
The draft is one thing, man, but working that wire is key. Now,
yeah.
Now you need to talk about drafting a tight end in the first five rounds. That's yeah, we need to talk about that.
I know. Well, you know, it's Gronk, man. I just, I'm very, I know.
You can only play one tight end, but you can play up to three wide receivers or running backs.
Right. Well, technically you can play two tight ends. Technically.
Yeah. But would you ever?
No. But
so you play one tight end.
Right. No, it's a good point. It is a good point. I mean, that's really, you know, I think the drafting, you know, that part of it is, I think, is interesting. Now, are you in any auction leagues?
You know, I'm not in any auction leagues now. I have been. And, you know, last year, actually, I wrote a little short little essay about, you know, things to look for in auction drafts and stuff. And I thought it was pretty good. Of course, I wrote it so I wouldn't think it sucked. But anyway, I'm looking at it, maybe looking to make this, not this year, but the year after that, one of my leagues an auction league. So, nice. I'm in a few other leagues as well. So we had talked about maybe moving that to an auction league. So I really want to do that again. It's a lot of fun. The draft is a lot of fun. If you put a premium on waiver wire pickups and keep that as an auction as well, it works pretty well too. So that is a lot of fun, but it's, you know, I'm not the commissioner of every league I'm in. You know, I can't call the shots always, but yeah, I think it would be good to be in one of those.
Right. That's cool. Yeah, it's one of the things I've always wanted to do. And I've always heard good things about it, but I've never done it. And you really can't practice for it. Like I've done some, you know, just like mock draft lobbies on ESPN. And it's impossible to simulate, you know, a live auction on there. Because, you know, half the guys aren't paying attention and they're not really. And it's like, okay, what are we doing? Like it's just, you know. And so for me personally, it's one of those things that I look at it and I'm like, you know, I think it's interesting. I think I'd like to do it, but you know, I think the big key is that you have to have people that really know what they're doing. If you know, if you're going to do that. So, but,
and you have to have everybody in the same room. Trying to do that online doesn't work. Doesn't work.
Right. Right.
You got to have to, because you have to be able to trash talk and, you know, stare down your opponent and all that kind of stuff. So,
right.
Yeah. Live definitely key.
That's cool. All right. Nice. I think that's it, my friend. So we had a nice conversation. Thank you for coming on. Now, where can people find you?
You can find us on Twitter, of course, at TFFG. That is at TFFG. That's pretty much where we communicate. Our website is thefantasyfootballguys.com. And that's basically just a forum. And you can, of course, find us on Blog Talk Radio at blogtalkradio.com/thefantasyfootballguys. We also have a network there. It's called Audio Oxygen. And we have a couple of other podcasts in there as well, the Daily Show, Daily Podcast, and a couple others. So check those out as well. And that's pretty much it. You can find us there. That's where all of our podcasts are.
All right, nice.
And, of course, yeah. iTunes.
Do all, of podcast course. App.
Yeah.
Rate, subscribe, review, all those good things, you know.
Stitcher and, you know, all those things.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I've listened to a few shows and I think it's a great show. And so, yeah, you two, obviously, I mean, you've been doing it for a long time with Lyle. And so obviously you have great chemistry together and it works really well together. And you guys are not only provide the information, but you also provide entertainment too, because, you know, just a fantasy football show can be pretty boring. So, you know, you guys provide enough entertainment and you're funny and it's a great show.
Thanks. I appreciate that, man. We don't try to be funny, but, you know, we try to entertain each other, and that's where it comes off. So
right.
Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't, but we always have fun, and that's really all that matters.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, thank you. Thanks again for coming on. And, you know, I know it was a pain getting everything together, but thought it came up pretty well. So thanks. Thanks for stopping by.
You bet, man. Glad it worked out that we could get it done. So, you know, have a good night.
Yeah, thanks. You too. All right, so big thanks to Kevin for coming on the show. It was a lot of fun, great interview, and really appreciate him. Make sure you check out his podcast, The Fantasy Football Guys. They are on Blog Talk Radio. They're also on iTunes, so definitely check them out. Him and Lyle do a great job breaking things down. And like I said to him, too, you know, keeping everyone entertained as well. So really, really good show. Definitely check that out. I know they're Eagles fans. Don't hold that against them, okay? It's all right. They still provide a lot of good content and a lot of good information for your fantasy football teams, and they've been doing it forever, you know? So definitely a great show. Check them out. So let's get right into the three-minute drill. I'm going to cheat a little bit today on today's three-minute drill. I'm not going to start the timer right away, okay? So today I'm going to do a little bracket here, a little bracket. Again, I have a Disney Pixar March Madness bracket here, okay? 32 movies. Half of them are going to be Disney movies. Half of them are going to be Pixar movies. And the bracket was kind of set up online. I didn't set up the bracket. I didn't set up what the movies were. I'm just going to read them to you what they were, okay? So I'm going to read you the 32 movies, the matchups. And we're going to go through the first two rounds. And then I'll start the timer. And we'll go from there. All right, so we're going to start on the top left, and I guess, you know, so this part is going to be Disney movies. So we can call this top Disney, you know, top and bottom, I guess, of the Disney movies. I guess we'll go north-south, so Disney North, Disney South. So Disney North looks like Lion King versus Tarzan, Princess and the Frog versus Lilo and Stitch, Tangled versus Big Hero 6, and Frozen versus Moana. So this one, to me, was fairly simple. Lion King takes it over Tarzan. Tarzan's got an unbelievable soundtrack with Phil Collins, but still, Lion King's might be the GOAT, okay? Princess and the Frog over Lilo and Stitch. I think Lilo and Stitch is a great movie. I love the Princess and the Frog, though, too. Very, very underrated movie. Really good one. Tangled over Big Hero 6. That one's an easy one for me. So, and then Moana over Frozen. Moana is one of those movies, man, where, and we'll talk about it a little bit with Coco, but they, you know, they hit on some pretty intense stuff, you know, some pretty, you know, big kind of ideas that, you know, they do a really good job of hitting on them. So I think it's definitely something, it's a really, really great movie. It's definitely, you know, one of the newer, obviously came out a few years ago, one of the newer movies, but it's a fantastic movie and it's definitely going to be a Disney classic for years to come. So let's go Disney South. Is Aladdin versus Hercules, Little Mermaid versus Pocahontas, Mulan versus Zootopia, and Beauty and the Beast versus Nightmare Before Christmas. So I go Aladdin over Hercules here. Hercules is a great movie, but Aladdin's Aladdin. Little Mermaid over Pocahontas, that's a bloodbath. I went Mulan over Zootopia. I think they're both very good movies.
I think Zootopia got a little bit too political for me towards the end there. Still a great movie, but it just tried a little too hard to do that whole thing. So I was kind of like, eh. And Mulan's a great movie anyway. So, and I went Beauty and the Beast over Nightmare Before Christmas. It's a tough draw for Nightmare Before Christmas because it's a great movie. You know, but it is kind of a niche movie, right? It's that kind of Halloween movie. So, you know, I guess that's the way it goes. But, I mean, against one of these other, you know, one of these other matchups, you know, it could have taken. So, it's definitely, you know, loses here. But it's one of the better, it's one of the better movies that don't get out of the first round on the Disney side. So, let's go over to the Pixar side. So, Pixar North, we got Up against Brave, Toy Story against Toy Story 2, Coco against Cars 2, and Toy Story 3 against The Good Dinosaur. Up over Brave. Brave's a great movie, too. You know, it's one of those interesting things where, you know, there are not many movies where they have a strong female cast or strong female character, and she doesn't have a love interest, right? Brave is one of them because she's young. Okay, so she doesn't have a love interest in that one. Moana's another one. Frozen, it was like, oh, it's all girls. But then it's like, well, you got Hans, you got Kristoff, and she's acting stupid because she hasn't met a guy before, and she gets engaged on the first day. And it's like, no. It's not really, you know, about women empowerment and all this other stuff. Not that that's the biggest deal in the world. But, you know, you talk about, you know, little girls looking up and aspiring to be, you know, a princess and aspiring to be one of these girls. You know, Brave does a good job of that. Unfortunately, it's going against Up, and Up is a great movie, and so Up gets over Brave. Toy Story over Toy Story 2. I think that one, to me, Toy Story is just iconic, right? And Toy Story 2 is good, but, I mean, against the original Toy Story, that's not fair. So, Coco over Cars 2. I mentioned Coco briefly, and I just want to talk about Coco a little bit more. Coco covers some really, really deep stuff, man. And if you haven't seen it, I highly recommend it. When you watch it, make sure you have some tissues because you are going to bawl like a baby. It's just, you're going to cry the whole damn, cry the whole damn movie. Okay? And it's a great movie. And, you know, a lot of feels there. Okay? But, I mean, that's just the way it goes. It's a great movie. And the thing is, they cover a lot of heavy topics, but they do a really good job of still making it very kid-friendly. So it's not, you know, the kids can understand it, and they can enjoy it, and they have fun with it. And, you know, and they could have made the Boxers podcast, actually Marcus's Boxers podcast was talking about, you know, how they could have made the skeleton scary, and they didn't, right? They're in this world of the dead, and they could have made it scary, and instead they made it kind of silly and funny, and so there are definitely parts of it, but as an adult, we kind of understand what's going on. So that one's a phenomenal movie. And so Coco over Cars 2 is an easy one. And then I went Toy Story 3 over Good Dinosaur. Good Dinosaur is a good movie, but Toy Story 3 is a great movie. So, and then Pixar South, we have Ratatouille against Bug's Life, Finding Nemo against Inside Out, Monsters, Inc. against Cars, and The Incredibles against WALL-E. So I went Ratatouille over Bug's Life. That one's not even close. Bug's Life is meh. I actually went Inside Out over Finding Nemo. And this one, man, this one I think could be the one I get some flack on. I just think Inside Out is such a good movie. And I can appreciate Inside Out a little bit more. I'm a dad. And, you know, seeing my kids and seeing kind of what's going on in their head, I thought it was really, really well done. And how there were, you know, certain parts of your life that are super important, and, you know, and what are you doing to kind of keep those things? I thought it was really, really, really well done. And obviously, Finding Nemo is great, and it's, you know, groundbreaking movie and everything like that. But I almost think, and Finding Dory is not on this list, which is lunacy that Finding Dory is on this list. You almost have to throw the bracket out because Finding Dory isn't on the list, and Wreck-It Ralph is on the list. And you're like, how are Wreck-It Ralph, Finding Dory not on this list? But that's the way it goes. I mean, A Bug's Life is on the list over Finding Dory. That is nuts. That's nuts that that's the case. But nevertheless. So, anyways, to me, I look at Finding Nemo, and the biggest problem I have with Finding Nemo almost is that it's like it's not as good as Finding Dory. I feel like Finding Dory is almost better than Finding Nemo, and if that's the case, I think it takes a little bit away from Finding Nemo. Whether that's fair or not, That's the way I looked at it. Loved Inside Out. I love, man, it's a tough matchup, and that's just the way it goes, right? Someone's going to lose the matchup, and unfortunately, we find a demon that lost. Monsters, Inc. over Cars. That one's easy. I know Cars is very popular, and as far as sales are concerned, like memorabilia sales, Cars is like number one, almost like of all time. But, you know, it just movie-wise doesn't hold a candle to Monsters, Inc. And I went The Incredibles over WALL-E. And again, WALL-E, great movie. Some really, really tough things to grasp there. Some things that they're trying to say about society and about people and what we're doing. But, you know, they still make it fun and they give you a really interesting, unique character. But The Incredibles, man, was just so much fun. You know, that's a great movie. And so I'm looking forward to Incredibles 2 as well. So let's go back to Disney North. Okay, and in second round here, and then when I get to the Elite Eight, I'll give you the 3 minute drill. Second round, I have Lion King over Princess and the Frog. That's, again, pretty simple there. It's Lion King. And then Moana over Tangled, which, again, to me, is really not that close. Tangled's a great movie, but no way does it hold a candle to Moana. I have Aladdin over The Little Mermaid, and, you know, some people may see that differently. To me, personally, I go Aladdin over Little Mermaid. Some people may go Little Mermaid over, but that's the way it goes. And then Beauty and the Beast over Mulan. That one's not close again either. Beauty and the Beast, another one of those, like, you know, goat movies where you're just like, oh my God, what a movie, right? Okay, and then up to Pixar North, I have Up over, I have Toy Story over Up. Up's a great movie, but Toy Story, tough to beat Toy Story there. And then I have Coco over Toy Story 3. And then I have Inside Out over Ratatouille. So Inside Out in Pixar South. Inside Out's going to the Elite Eight. And Monsters, Inc. over The Incredibles. So just to recap before I start my... as a matter of fact, you know what? I'm going to start it right now. Let's do that right now. Here we go. So you know it's real. So you know it's live. I'm just getting into my phone, getting into my thing. So here we go. 3 minute drill starts now. Here we go. So the Elite Eight. Lion King versus Moana. Aladdin versus Beauty and the Beast, Toy Story versus Coco, Inside Out versus Monsters, Inc. So, I'll start with Lion King and Moana first. I went Lion King over Moana. I think you can make a strong argument for Moana here. Again, strong female character, no love interest, great movie. They do an awesome job about talking about, you know, death and loss and... You know, and also, like, second-guessing yourself and finding out who you are and, you know, following your dreams and following your heart. But I just can't vote it over The Lion King. Lion King is a transcendent movie. And not only that, but it's become, you know, a phenomenon on the Broadway scene as well. And so I went Lion King there. And then I went Beauty and the Beast over Aladdin because Beauty and the Beast is, you know, let's be honest. I mean, it is a phenomenal movie, probably one of the best that Disney's ever made. So that one was a pretty easy choice for me. And again, so now over to Pixar North, I went Toy Story over Coco. And that was a tough decision for me because Coco is a great movie. I think it's going to be one of the classics that we look back on how classic of a movie that is. But Toy Story, I mean, if Toy Story doesn't happen, none of these movies happen, right? It's the first real Pixar movie. It's a great movie. They've made multiple now Toy Stories. It's beloved. And so to me, I put Toy Story in the final four. And then Monsters, Inc. over Inside Out. And again, I love Inside Out. Big fan of it. But to me, it doesn't really hold a candle to Monsters, Inc. You have those, you know, very, very memorable characters. So that's where I went with that. And then the final four. So on the Disney side, it's Lion King versus Beauty and the Beast. I went Lion King over Beauty and the Beast. I just thought that, you know, Lion King, again, transcendent movie. And there are characters in there that are, you know, unforgettable, right? You have the Scar and, you know, how they, and again, you know, you have things that kids aren't necessarily grasping, okay? So you have Scars being compared to Hitler in there. They have this, you know, the whole thing is like a Nazi rally. It's crazy. And so, you know, but that's stuff that, you know, the kids don't pick up on, but we do. So I got Lion King there, and then Toy Story over Monsters, Inc. Again, Monsters, Inc., great movie, but Toy Story is Toy Story, so that has to be in the finals. So it's Lion King versus Toy Story in the finals, and I got Lion King winning. You know, Lion King, to me,
best Disney movie of all time. I think you can argue other ones, certainly. That's what makes this bracket so much fun, is that there are good arguments for other movies. But in this case, I look at it and say, I think The Lion King has to be the number one movie there. And so that's where I went. And again, I thought Toy Story, Pixar, without Toy Story, oh, there we go. Without Toy Story, Pixar doesn't happen. So that's why I have Toy Story in my finals there. So that's it. So I hope you enjoyed that. It's kind of a lot of fun, and you know, as we approach the end of March Madness. So, all right. So let's get into this week in sports history. I have a few, and as always, I will go in chronological order. I will start with March 29th, 1940. Joe Louis KOs Johnny Paycheck. Do I know anything about this fight? No, I do not. But I saw Johnny Paycheck, and I said, this guy's name is Johnny Paycheck. We need to talk about him because he has the greatest name of all time. Okay, and so, yeah, that's pretty much it. Joe Louis knocked him out. He actually had a pretty solid record, but Joe Louis knocked him out, and I believe that was for the heavyweight championship. So that was way back in 1940, but, I mean, times are different back then, right? The names were crazy and everything else, so... Johnny Paycheck, hell of a name. Hell of a name, unfortunately. Put up a good fight against Joe Louis, but couldn't win. So, also March 29th, 1984, the Baltimore Colts move out of Baltimore to Indianapolis. Bob Irsay, just an absolute slime ball move. One of the slimiest, weaseliest moves in the history of sports. Literally, in the middle of the night, packs up and leaves Maryland and goes to Indianapolis, and it's one of those things that you just can't even believe that it happened. I mean, they tell a story, and you're like, no, that couldn't happen. It couldn't have happened that way. Like, the middle of the night, they just got up and left. Nobody knew. No one knew they were leaving. No one knew where they were going. Nothing. They just said, we're out of here, and they were just gone. Went to bed one night, you had a football team. Woke up the next morning, you didn't have a football team. And really, I mean, you just think about it, and it's like in the middle of the night to leave like that, it's just, it's horrifying, really is what it is. And you know, really kind of a terrible thing. And now his son, you know, son's got all sorts of issues too. So, you know, that family hasn't done wonders for the NFL, but that's part of the history, unfortunately. And of course, the Browns then moved back to Baltimore, right? They became the Ravens, and the Browns moved back to Cleveland. Now they're Cleveland, so it's like, it's a mess. But nevertheless, Baltimore's got a team again. They've won a championship since then. They've been competitive since then. As a matter of fact, they've won two championships since then. And so, you know, I guess for them, they've got two championships. Indy's got one. So I guess, you know, for them, it's been better. But, you know, man, it's a tough pill to swallow, I would imagine. I know, you know, around here, I mean, some people don't remember, but, you know, there's a lot of talk about the Patriots leaving and moving to St. Louis before the Rams went there. And, you know, I couldn't imagine not having my team here, you know, and the team you grew up with and the team you watch your whole life. And, you know, I mean, I was young, but, like, you know, my dad was talking about, like, this is it. You know, I remember the front page of the Globe or Herald, and, you know, it was like Pat Patriot hitching a ride, and he's like leaving, and it was just like so sad. Like, he's gone. He's you know, we're not gonna have a team anymore. And of course, you know, Kraft bought the team and everything else like that, and so it didn't happen. But you know, to lose your team is one thing, and it's horrifying. And it's terrible, and you know, it's happened to Oakland a few times, and now it's happening again next year because you're going to Vegas. But to happen a middle night like that, I mean, to feel like you get, you know, the guy doesn't even have the common decency to, you know, be a man and, like, take what's coming to him. He's like, nah, I'm just leaving. Literally under the cover of darkness, he's just leaving. And so, you know, certainly tough. And one thing that I would imagine anyone from Baltimore won't be forgetting anytime soon. And honestly, you know, if I'm just a casual NFL fan, I can't look at Indianapolis the same way. You know, I know that, and I'm looking at it like, these guys, like, no, these guys, screw them, dude. And I know, you know, obviously, it was 34 years ago, right? So it's not on the players. I mean, you know, I would say all the players except for Adam Vinatieri were probably not even alive when that happened, okay? But it doesn't matter. It's a stain on the franchise. And, you know,
the owner of the team, while he's not the owner anymore, his son is still the owner, still in the family. So, you know, I think it's a little bit of a stain on the franchise, in my opinion. So, but anyways, that's all we got for this week. I want to just say thank you again to Kevin for coming on. Appreciate that. Check out their podcast. Again, it's a Fantasy Football Guys podcast. And so check that out. Also want to give a shout out to MDOT and Core for the outro song. It's Mike is MDOT, I'm sorry, is on Instagram and Twitter at MDOT Boston. And Core is on Twitter at Core of EMS. And it's Core with a K, K-O-R-E of EMS. Okay. Also, big shout out to Marcus for the intro. It's such a dope intro song. And, you know, him and Wesley do their podcast on Monday. So they come out with a podcast every Monday reviewing a different movie. So check them out. It's The Boxers, and I believe it's at Boxers Podcast on Twitter. So check them out. They do really, really great work. And so we appreciate him lending his vocal talents to us.
Also, don't forget to follow along with the show at Weekend War Pod on Instagram and Twitter. And again, that's Weekend with no E, so WKNDWARPOD. So do that, please. And if you can rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast, we'd appreciate that. Anyway, you listen, but iTunes is kind of the big one, kind of gets the name out a little bit. So really appreciate that if you could do that. Thank you very much, and we will talk to you next week.
Simmons, no timeouts. You gotta go. Bro, put the game upside down like a snow globe. Weekend Warriors, it's the podcast. What you call the commentary, should I call trash?
Warriors, come out to play.
Weekend Warriors, it's the podcast. What you call the commentary, should I call trash?
Hey, yo,
WCP. We Warriors, especially on the weekend. Looking for that sports talk, this is where it be, man. Breakdowns on your favorite teams and all that. Hear about the starters long before the ball snap. You can call Pat or go ahead and call Mike, cause we here all night, no time to stall, right? 2 seconds left, clutch shot, it's go time. Knuckles on the O-line, watch the losers go wine.
Turn me up on that radio dial. It's been a while since I played, but I'm here with a smile. I'm taking jump shots, get them in and I'm out. I'm breaking records like Bill Russell, kid has got muscle. Being polite when I'm patting this mic. You see the city of champs coming to victory dance, buddy. It's radio talk, so turn it up. When it's on, we're gonna listen and rock to what it is that you want. Warriors,
y'all need to tune in. This is the show, bro.